hell?
Everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like GEICO is more than just a company that can save you money. GEICO also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Go!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Curry takes it front court, waits for Draymond, doubled, loop pass to Draymond, middle of the floor, lob inside, Iguodala turned his back to the basket, over the head, oh my goodness, a little elevation sensation for Iguodala.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors huddle with me, Bram. And with me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
Scotty, we've got no Resty again, who is still dealing with the health problems. And you know what? Let's break rank. For those of you out there who have been following us for a while, you know that Resty always refuses to give out his Twitter account. I'll tell you a secret. He does, in fact, have a Twitter account. And if anybody wants to wish him well, tell him he needs to get his ass back to this podcast, or even just point out he has no idea how to use the word transmogrify, his Twitter account is Rusty_SF. Kron. So shoot him some well wishes or something nice and include us so we can see what the hell you guys are up to.
And don't forget about that underscore. That is an old school Twitter move, I feel.
It's terrible. Old school. It's just a terrible Twitter move. And if he were here, I would tell him that. We'll wait till he makes his comeback.
I had to underscore my first email address. I regret it.
That does not surprise me. That seems like a terrible decision. You know, I almost put out a bunch of free shirts today to see whether or not you'd put it on when you came in. Would you have?
To do what?
Free shirts. I was going to put free shirts all around all the other chairs to see whether or not... Jesus, Scott, I'm going to need you to get my jokes, man. You're my co-host. This is not getting off to a good start.
Sorry.
Obviously, we're going forward with a two-man booth, and as we've already seen, I'm thrusting you right into a much larger speaking role you've had to do the last couple times. You feeling good about it? You fired up?
Well, there's only so much thing as a large speaking role when Bram is hosting a podcast, so I'm feeling pretty comfortable that I can talk for 1 to 2 minutes.
I definitely have to give you credit. You went from not understanding my jokes at all to firing one off on your own. That was well played. Let's use your momentum, jump into the Warriors' focus. What I want to do is talk about the Memphis loss, but not the nuts and bolts of it. You know, there's no need to go through painstaking detail of what the hell happened. Instead, I think it brought up some kind of reoccurring themes that deserve our attention. Here's the first one. The Warriors have now lost to Memphis twice, which is intriguing for a couple of reasons. One, over the last few years, the Warriors have not lost to the same team twice during the regular season at all. Two, the ways they've lost to Memphis this year are somewhat concerning. They got their ass smashed 110-89 in December, and in this last one, they were in control. They were up 24 in the second half, and then they gave up that lead wholeheartedly. So my first question for you, to me, Memphis has now taken over the title from Utah of team I don't really want to see in the beginning of the playoffs. I'm a little worried about their matchup. Do you agree?
Utah definitely had that same... kind of occupied that same space for me early on. But it's funny how the season goes on and you see the different matchups and you see maybe how different teams are developing. And Memphis, with its size, given the Warriors' lack of interior big men to handle, it's a problem. I mean, you saw in the fourth quarter of that game, they put Zaza in for a large stretch of minutes because you needed some size in there. But at the same time, Zaza's not the guy you want in the game when the Warriors' offense has gone stagnant.
No doubt. Oh, and we should point out, obviously, if the Warriors enter that series, they'll be huge favorites. If I had to bet my life, it would be on the Warriors winning that series in like five games. It's not like I'm pointing them out as some team who's going to beat us.
And we're far away from the playoffs. Who knows what the matchups are going
to
be.
But we like to talk about drama on this show. There is reason for drama here. One, you've already pointed out, the whole weirdo mismatches. They run an entirely different type of style than the rest of the NBA. You know, while the league is zigging towards three-pointers, they're zagging back towards playing in the post. And two, they really underscore our inability to play post defense. You know, we've got a good help post defender in Kevin Durant, but we don't have anybody who really matches up with Zebo or Gasol down low. And then the second thing that kind of pointed out to me, or that concerns me, and I know you don't like F-bombs, so, you know, I apologize in advance, but this team specializes in not giving a f*** about who the Warriors are. You know, there are other teams out there who would be a little starstruck, you know, who are cognizant of the stars on the Warriors team. And when they start hitting three-pointers against them, you know, they'll give up a little bit earlier. They recognize the barrage that's happening. Memphis is not like that. Tony Allen does not care about Steph Curry. Zebo does not care about Kevin Durant. They don't care when they get down 24. And that's a huge advantage when you're playing a team like Golden State.
I'm still not worried overall because I can't imagine that Durant and Klay miss a total of 5 free throws again.
Right.
And Memphis, it seemed like they were trying almost a new strategy of we're just going to foul. Like, we will foul nonstop in order to slow the game down and hope that you make some free throws. And they didn't. And I think over the course of a 7-game series, that's not going to be an effective strategy.
Of course. And the Warriors win that just like we were saying. I also had like this super hot take about how Fizdale, their head coach, used to coach for the Warriors as an assistant coach. So I was going to use some We Believe analogy about how Don Nelson knew about Dallas and was able to kind of exploit all their shortcomings. Then I looked it up. I was right. Fizdale was an assistant coach. It was in 2003 and 2004. So that probably didn't translate. So really, we got robbed of some Bram Gold, man. I had some real solid takes, I thought.
When you started that take right there, I was like, oh gosh, I was going to have to press pause because Bram got the coach wrong. I mean, I'm glad you eventually, after way too much time, got to where you wanted to vote.
Why don't we just go back to you not understanding jokes and deferring? I mean, you're taking far too many shots here. Other thing the Memphis loss illustrated, and we've kind of referenced a couple times, is that the Warriors are showing, I don't know if concerning is the right word, but they have a habit of giving up real large leads. They were up 14 in the fourth against Cleveland. They were up 24 against Memphis. And this is the downside of the pace the Warriors play at. You know, when you're pushing the ball as fast as they are and you're creating the amount of possessions, not only for you, you're creating an insane amount of possessions for the opposing team because you score so fast. If you go cold, if those shots stop falling, that's a huge problem because if they start falling for the other team, they can speed back. And I think we saw that against both Cleveland and Memphis, man.
And the thing about the Memphis part of it that's really scary is, and I think Barnett said it multiple times during that broadcast, is supposedly a lead against Memphis of 10 points is like having a lead of 20 points against normal teams, yet Memphis still came back from a 24-point deficit. So even against a team like Memphis who is slow and deliberate, the Warriors' pace was still able to be something that resulted in a team like Memphis being able to come back.
I'm going to say something a little controversial, kind of weird. I think I enjoyed watching the Memphis game more than I enjoyed watching like Sacramento or even the Portland win. And it goes back to stuff you and I have talked about off air. I don't know if we've done it on here, but in some ways, man, close games get me way more fired up. You know, I mean, like when they are dominating teams and there's no question they're going to win, I enjoy it. That's what I want to have happen. But as an actual entertaining, you know, segment of my life, it's not like that. I kind of tune out. I don't care as much. I don't pump my fist as much. When the Warriors went to overtime and they're now playing Memphis, I was as engaged in that game as I was for like the finals. I was hell of angry. I'm dropping hell of F-bombs around the wife and the 2-year-old at home. So is that true for you? Like, do you get sucked into these close games more than giant wins?
Who wouldn't get sucked into a close game that has drama? I mean, it's the same reason why kind of reality television has sprung up to be the new wave of TV. And you don't have things like shows like Friends or Perfect Strangers, you know, these terrible sitcoms that
was the last time you watched TV, like the mid-90s? Is there nothing in between those two at all? Did it also like interrupt your ability to watch Leave It to Beaver or what?
I'm just saying that the TV has transformed a lot, and I think they've realized that people really like drama. And the same thing is true in games. I mean, watching a blowout can be a lot of fun, but may not be that entertaining. But yeah, close games are great.
There's just no stakes. And as far as drama, and really, this is probably the biggest thing that came out of that Memphis game. And so I am sure 95% of the audience saw Draymond screaming at Kevin Durant towards the end of the game. And at that time, I didn't understand the context. Since we've had all types of breaking down of the play that happened before and led to the screaming. So here's my kind of recount of it, and I got a couple questions for you. So the Warriors are now up 111, 109. There's like 35 seconds left. If they score, game's over, right? Steph's got the ball. He's coming up court, and he's on his way to a 40-point game, so he's hot as hell, and it looks like they're going to run a pick and roll with he and Durant. Durant comes up and asks for the ball, and Curry waves him off once. Durant stays there. Curry now has to decide. Does he wave him off again, which would create a little bit of drama, right? And TV shows everywhere would have immediately hocked onto it. So instead, he gives up the ball to Durant, puts his head down a little bit as if he was kind of disappointed with what happened. And I only know this because of the replay. At that exact moment, Draymond also throws a little bit of a tantrum. He's angry that Steph has given up the ball. We now fast forward 2 seconds, and Durant takes a bad three-pointer that rims out. Draymond does not go after the rebound. In fact, he's a little petulant about it. And now, on the other side of the floor following a timeout, we watch Draymond screaming at Kevin Durant. Remember what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. That was a really painting a vivid picture for me.
Yeah, well, I said that because it looked like you were tuning out multiple times during that, so I wanted to bring you back in. Well, they asked Kevin Durant about what Draymond told them. Here's what he said.
What did Draymond have to say there at the end after the shot you had near the end of the regulation?
Just told us that he said we should stuck with the pick and roll. He didn't say anything about the shot if that's what you want to know. But he said we should have stuck with pick and roll and just basically saying late in the game, you know, offense was a little, you know, we went away from what we were doing the whole game. So, you know, he's very passionate and, you know. You know, so it looked a little different, but, you know, it was just about us staying what we did all game and just wondering why we went away from it.
So here's my question for you. Did anybody do anything wrong? If you could go back and you could change any of your interactions, Steph's, KD's, Draymond's, anything, who would you point the finger at? What would you change?
I would change Draymond putting his head down when Durant's shot goes up and Draymond not going for the rebound because Draymond, he's the guy we always say is the type of player who is making the extra play when no one else will. He's the guy who's giving the extra effort when everyone else is tired. And he's the guy you rely on to be the heartbeat of your team. And to have controversy or to think something else should have happened, that's fine. And it's great that he was going crazy on the sidelines during it. But once the shot goes up, the decision as to what's going to happen has happened. And now you need to move on to the next play. And you have to go and at least try to get the rebound.
Well, especially because not getting the rebound immediately hurts the team. When I rewatched it, I was upset at Durant. And I don't know if I'm on base with it, but I'll stick with it. By the time Steph was hot, even had Steph not been hot, this is his team still. They're still developing the hierarchy. And if he waves you off in his arena, I would have liked to have seen Durant back off and just respect that and avoid any drama that would have come
with. If Durant was hot, though, would he then have the right to call for the ball?
Sure, if he had the ball and that's how it was supposed to run, then I guess so. But in this in particular instance, just on that in particular game, Steph is on his way to 40, which is what he ended up with. And he very clearly wanted the rock in his hands because he waves him off. The idea that Durant demanded it or did not actually follow what the hell Curry wanted bothers me.
Durant had Z-Bo on him. I don't think Durant can take Z-Bo? Okay, that's a great matchup.
I do, and that's exactly what ultimately happened, except he took the three. So, you know, if that had ended up with Durant taking Z-Bo to the hole and using his considerable speed advantage over Zach Randolph, then I would be a little bit less pissy because chances are they score, and we never even hear about any of this.
But so just it's a three-pointer. That's your
problem. No. I'll stick with it. It is conceptual. Right now, this team is trying to figure out who the alpha dog is at the back end of games. And we've already seen one in Cleveland where Kerr drew up the ball for Durant. And obviously, Curry is seated. It was what it was. That's how they called it. But I think that Curry has earned the right at the end of these games to be able to wave off Durant, at least now, until Durant's been here for a couple years or have won a championship or an MVP in this jersey. And when he did it and Durant did not follow it, I did have a little bit of problem with that. I think he should have recognized who Curry is in that building.
I think that Durant is the type of guy who he sees that he has Z-Bo on him, and that is just a great matchup that I would take any day of the week. And the fact that he pulled up for the three, probably not the smartest decision, but Z-Bo was giving him like 5 feet.
I understand why Durant did it, and I think that there's basketball reasons behind it that could completely justify it. That's not where I'm going. You know, I think that in these circumstances, you know, when we're trying to figure out right now how things go at the end of games, there's going to be some give and take. There's going to be some compromise. And Steph legitimately, with his hands, asked to keep the ball, right? I mean, he waved his ass off. At that time, it was no longer a basketball analysis. This was something between the two of them, and I wish that he had kept in mind what Steph had done in the past. Now, Durant has finished every game, I would imagine, from the time he was like 5 years old until like, you know, all the way through this year. Like, does it surprise me that he would want the ball or demand the ball or expect the ball? No, not at all. And doesn't surprise me in any way that he wasn't able to make that decision immediately. What we are doing now is, you know, 2020 hindsight. I don't know if I would have that intelligence. But if I'm breaking it down from a 2020 point of view after it's happened, then I would. I would have liked them to have gone back with Curry, especially if it's been working. And I feel real confident on this because you know who agrees with me? Kevin Durant. Here's what Kevin Durant said when they asked him about how the Golden State offense got stagnant.
Did you guys get stagnant offensively down the stretch?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we made some good shots, but, you know, we got some good looks. But, you know, late in the game, we just got to, you know, stick to what we've been doing all game. Something was successful. We just got to keep going to it. And, you know, I think as Steph had it going and in the pick and roll, we should have stayed with that, I think.
What I love about that, one, that it makes me sound like I was right, even though I'm really kind of cheating because I knew what the hell he was going to say. But two, it illustrates, I think, that there is no existing ill will. That Draymond screams at Kevin Durant on the other side of the floor, go with what's working, go with the pick and roll, right? And it became this big deal. Then they ask Kevin Durant at the press conference, what could you have done better? And what does he do? Echoes Draymond Green. You know, he didn't bring any resentment in there. He literally said exactly what he was told. I like that.
I think that this whole thing is showing how mature and what a team player Kevin Durant is. Like, he has completely gotten on board with whatever story the Warriors came up with out of the locker room as to how we can make sure this doesn't become some ongoing drama. And he's on board with it. He's willing to say whatever the political line is that he needs to say.
If you could snap your fingers right now and take Draymond Green's emotional fury away, would you?
I would not.
Yeah. I mean, because there's no way to separate how good he is and these occasional emotional outbursts, right?
That's correct. But I will say, I don't recall him getting as emotional or going this berserk early on in his career. I think he's taken it to levels beyond what it used to be, and it's becoming a little too much. But that's kind of a whole nother conversation, I guess.
Can you tell that I'm trying to let you speak as much as possible after your opening take? I don't know if that's obvious to the audience, but is it obvious to you? Can you see there's a bunch of questions, a lot of back and forth? I don't know if you're picking that up, because I don't feel like I'm getting a whole lot of credit for it. So
this has been my favorite podcast appearance of the 150 plus episodes we've done. How about that?
It's my least, just by far my least favorite, and it's making me really frustrated, but I'm glad you noticed it. Another thing that deserves our attention, although any other takes on that? I mean, I think bottom line is that, and this is a recurring theme that we've said almost every single show since the beginning of this year, the Warriors are learning. They're figuring it out.
Kerr in the post-game press conference after that Memphis game said, I'm still tinkering with the end-of-the-game offense.
Right.
So it's definitely something that they're still trying to figure out.
Draymond came out and said, I'm really happy that happened. You know, and actually, Kevin Durant had a very similar quote. You know, these guys are still figuring it out, and it hopefully will prove to be the exact opposite of last year. Last year, we peaked in the regular season and then fell apart in the playoffs. We found all these prat holes we didn't know how the hell to get over. This year, it looks like we're not going to peak in the regular season. It looks like we're going to go through some bumps and bruises, even though they are the best record in the league.
They haven't been peaking, but they got the best record is a funny concept.
No, and another kind of pat on the back for how damn good these guys are. But hopefully, we'll see all this stuff kind of buttoned up before we get to the playoffs. Now, the Cavs, unfortunately, have not been completely dormant since the last time we saw them. In fact, since the last time the Warriors played the Cavs and since the last time you and I podcasted, they made an addition. They gave up a 2019, I think, first-round pick and Mike Dunleavy to the Cavs and ended up with Kyle Korver. For those who haven't been following Korver's game, he's 6'7", 220 or 212 pounds, 35-year-old shooting guard. This year, he's averaging 9.5 points, 2.8 rebounds, and 2.3 assists. But really, what his utility is he is one hell of a three-point shooter. He's a career 43% shooter, and just as an aside, one of the most and easily hateable faces in the league. He's one of those dudes who's like kind of resentfully good-looking. Like, I don't like him because of that. And whenever he plays well and there's a timeout, he has this really condescending smile that makes me feel like punching him in his nose. So I am already getting ready to really hate Korver. But
Did you ever see Cruel Intentions, the movie?
I think I did.
I think he's like kind of like reminds me of the bad guy in that movie.
Well, I mean, I feel you, but since he looks basically exactly like Austin Kutcher or whatever the hell that dude's name is, unless that was the guy in that movie,
I don't think
that actually backs up. But assuming nobody wants to hear more takes about his looks, let's talk about his game. His addition to the Cavs, were you?
I'm not too worried about it because they had J.R. Smith, and J.R. Smith is a big three-point shooter. I don't think he obviously doesn't shoot with the accuracy that Korver does, but whatever. They got another three-point shooter. The guy's 35 years old. He's coming off of an injury. I forget exactly what the injury was, but he hasn't been completely healthy lately. And he's going to make some big threes. I'm sure there are going to be a couple games where he hits a dagger, and it's really frustrating that they got him in a trade. But overall, it's not going to have, I think, too large of an impact.
Concerns me. I don't know if it's going to be like the straw that broke the camel's back. Again, if I had to bet money on a 7-game series, my money's on the Warriors. But he really worries me, and here's why. Kyrie Irving and LeBron James, which is a weird way to say. But what that Christmas game underlined for me is our inability to keep those two guys out of the lane. And for as long as they can penetrate past Clay and past Iguodala and past Steph and force us to collapse on them, Kyle Korver is the type of dude, if you leave him wide open at any portion of the court, I'm more afraid of him at a wide open three-pointer than I am Channing Frye, than I am J.R. Smith. He'll make those. And I think that there could be some games that he could really turn if he gets hot. And so that's a little bit concerning for me. And I don't think the Warriors need to make a move to you know somehow compensate for it. And it doesn't change what they have to do to beat them. They still just have to keep Kyrie and LeBron in front of them. But I'd be lying to you to tell you that it didn't make me a little antsy.
I think it was a good trade for the Cavs. If I were the Cavs, I would have done it. But overall, I don't think it's going to be the thing that brings Cleveland the championship.
As I mentioned, Mike D was part of the move. Now we understand that he's willing to report to Atlanta and everything's fine there. But there was like a 20-minute period there where right after the move, people were suggesting that Mike Dunleavy might end up right back on the Warriors. Now, if you had any bodies to get rid of, I'm sure Scotty D, you would have been real happy to see him.
I was fired up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, I'll give you an old school perspective. The last thing I wanted to do is have Mike D on this team. He might even be able to help us. I'm not even telling you that as a player, he would be any worse than McAdoo or something. But I've had so many ugly evenings with Mike Dunleavy and so many terrible memories that I just couldn't stand bringing him back. It'd be like having a girlfriend in my past who was batshit crazy and then got her stuff together and it was possible for me to bring her back in my life. I couldn't. There's no way. I can't look at her the same way, and I cannot accept Mike Dunleavy back in a Golden State Warriors uniform. You don't share that history. Would you have been fine?
You were not the only one, because if you followed the Warrior fandom when that 20 minutes took place, it was like an explosion of like, oh my God, no, we can't have Dunleavy. We can't have Dunleavy. People were going insane.
How about you? Give me your Scotty D take. Would you have taken him back?
I'm just not. Who would he replace? I don't know. I'm definitely not fired up about having Mike Dunleavy, other than the fact that maybe he'd move and live in the Bay Area and would be great to.
He'd be right there for you.
Take care of anybody.
Yeah, I could help you with any legal problems that may come up. Well, I'm glad it didn't actually happen at all. Last thing the Memphis game kind of brought up for me, there's been this undercurrent that's just been ridiculous to me, that Steph Curry has been in a slump this year, or that he's not playing up to his normal standards, right? And against Memphis, he ended up with 40. And in fact, since the Christmas game, he's had 28 against Toronto, 35 v. Portland, and 30 v. Sacramento just on Sunday. So I think that take was ridiculous. But did you buy into it? Did you ever think that he was actually playing poorly?
His shooting accuracy from three-point range has definitely decreased this year. I think he's down in like the 40th in the league as far as three-point shooting field goal percentage. So from just a statistical standpoint, and that's gone down. His scoring average has gone down from last year. But I think that he is – I wouldn't call it a slump, because you added Kevin Durant.
Yes.
They're still trying to figure things out. So in that regard, no.
Yeah, he's getting shots in a different place. And these fools who are talking about his averages going down, it's a weird analogy, but that's never stopped me before. If you had an eating champion, right, like literally a competitive eater, and then you told that guy, I want you to split every meal from here on out with another person. And then I started saying, you know what? That guy's not that good at eating because he's only eating half as much. It's ridiculous. Of course his numbers are down. He is sharing the ball with one of the most dominant offensive forces on the face of the earth. Someone, in fact, who won't even get waved off when he wants to keep the ball at the end of the game. So people who have been looking at their stats to suggest that this guy isn't playing at the same level, one, is stupid because he doesn't have the ball as much, but two, you're comparing those stats to some of the best seasons in the history of the world. Like, what Steph did last year was insane. I don't know if anyone will be able to do that again, and the fact that he isn't reaching it for the second time does not mean he's having a down year. It just means he isn't superhuman constantly.
The fact that his field goal percentage is down from the three-point line, though, why does that have anything to do with Durant coming?
Because he's getting shots in different places and in different locations and at different times. Because he's figuring out exactly where he fits in. We've talked about one of the reasons, one of the main things that spurred them on to the 73 wins was this idea of consistency. That they knew the system and they knew where their shots were coming. That consistency has been thrown out the window. We're redeveloping it now. So Steph is not, I mean, he's still a historically great shooter. But does the fact that he's taking shots in different places at different times in the game knocked his accuracy down? That doesn't surprise me. That seems like that's exactly what should happen.
So one thing I'll say is there, I do see a difference in aggressiveness between the start of the season and these last couple of games. I really do think that he has been driving more. Oh, yeah. He's been handling the ball a little more. Yeah. And I think that when you look at the Warriors' offensive struggles down the stretch, and one reason why Durant eventually came to conclude we needed to run the pick and roll is when Steph has the ball in his hands, it may not necessarily end in a Steph shot, but it moves the entire defense in a way that it does when no one else has the ball, and it could result in the better shot for somebody else. So you run that pick and roll, Steph may end up getting an open look, but the reality is they may double team him and he'll dump it to Durant for a layup.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know what that reminded me of? I wanted to say this earlier. The last thing that bothered me about that last sequence and the reason the three-pointer from Durant hit me in a weird place is that, you know, I'm sure we can all remember, right? The Warriors go cold against Cleveland and they keep firing up three-pointers and it hurts your heart. You know, all you want is a shot in the lane or a 15-footer. Like, stop shooting three-pointers. Then in the offseason, they sign Durant. And we think, okay, problem solved. We got somebody who can get to the rim when he wants. And if he can't get to the rim, he's 7 feet. So he can go post up. And we finally had that scenario, right? He notices that Zach Randolph's on him. And he's a 7-footer. And we need a bucket. We don't need a three. We're up two. We need a bucket. And instead of getting that shot that we all associated Kevin Durant with, he fired up the exact kind of three-pointer that lost us the finals. Now, will it keep happening? No. Will they fix it? I'm sure. But it did. It was kind of a pissy moment. One of the reasons I screamed out an F-bomb as that thing clanged off the rim.
Yeah, because they go way too much for these dagger three-pointers at the end of games, or when they start to get behind or things start to feel a little tight, they go for these three-pointers like that's going to bring them out of whatever slump they're in.
Right.
And the reality is it would just be much better off to drive, try to get to the free throw line, do something, move the ball. They had zero assists in that fourth quarter in the Memphis game. Zero assists. I think that may be the first quarter all season that's happened.
Just get something easy. Just get something easy. Let me push this in a different direction. The Zaza All-Star bid. So for people who have not been paying attention, the votes came out and Zaza Pachulia is second among Western Conference front court players with 439,675 votes. For point of reference, he's ahead of Kawhi Leonard, who was the runner-up to the MVP last year, and ahead of Anthony Davis, who is having like maybe the best year of anybody at anywhere throughout the year. So there's something going on, right? And there's been suggestions that like Russians have like went in there and screwed up the vote, but we don't have to talk about that. My question for you is, I love it. As a Warriors fan and being totally biased and unnecessary, I like the idea that he's going to get in here and somehow cheat to give us a chance of like four All-Stars. Do you like it?
Well, you and Draymond Green feel similar. I heard like he said it happened. The same thing happened last year where Zaza was and Durant. Draymond said, you know, last year I found it really annoying or something like that, and this year I think it's pretty funny.
That's my boy. It turns out me and Draymond agree on Kevin Durant and Zaza Pachulia. We need to get him on the show.
Oh, that'd be tremendous. I have a whole problem with everything All-Star related. The whole, everything about All-Star Weekend drives me nuts. So,
what are you talking about?
I don't like the voting for it. I think it should be chosen by even, I don't know, maybe if you're going to have a vote, the players and the the coaches.
Who hates All-Star Weekend? What are you talking about? It drives you nuts. Why would All-Star Weekend drive you nuts? Like, maybe some parts of it, right? Like, the whole thing with the WNBA player and the retired player, that sucks. The skills
That's my
challenge.
Favorite part.
No, that can't that can't be true. But, like, it doesn't make any sense to me that you dislike All-Star Weekend. Let me change the question a little bit. And I'll keep this one personal. If I'm Zaza and this is happening, it makes me feel uncomfortable. I wouldn't like it. You know, like I have the type of personality type where I'd feel like everybody knows I don't deserve it. And like now people are watching and like I don't really need this attention because I don't know.
You're trying to think of what injury you can come up with
sure.
close to the game
right.
to kind of get
That's
out
exactly
of it.
Right. Or like maybe even pull like that super pious move of like, no, I don't deserve it. I'll just let whatever Anthony Davis go. Right. Are you like that? Are you as unnecessarily modest or would you actually show up like, hey, they voted me in, so let's go. I'll be starting.
It's a tough call. I mean, it really depends on the situation because I see where you're coming from. It could be super, super weird to know that you're not doing that well and get in. But at the same time, you have a very short career, relatively speaking, and you've got a chance to become an all-star.
It is what it is.
And be in the all-star festivities and enjoy everything that comes with that. He may even have performance bonuses paid to being an all-star.
I can see you being like, look, I would play in this, but I hate all of All-Star Weekend, so I refuse to participate in your pomp and circumstance. This is completely ridiculous. One last take, and then we want to go to our game show, man. Are you smarter than a bandwagon fan? I was in a bar to watch at least the first half of the Sacramento game. And I got into a conversation with this random person, and periodically I would use the phrase we when talking about the Warriors, right? We're looking bad. We need a good shot here. We need to get the ball to Kevin Durant. And at some point, the guy gets a little bit pissy about it and goes, look, do you play for the Warriors? And I understood what he meant, and I just didn't answer at all and kept watching. He goes, because you shouldn't be using the phrase we unless you play for them. Now, one, do you use the phrase we? Two, is it appropriate?
I have like 30 teams and I use we with all of them.
I totally forgot that. That's exactly right. Is there any prerequisite to it? If I decide right now that I'm rooting for your terrible Pistons, can I start saying we or is there like, do I have to root for them for a certain amount of years?
I think if you're a fan of the team at the moment, you can use we whenever you want. If that's the team you're rooting for at that moment, then say we.
I'm going to say like, arbitrary line, 5 years. I think you should have to root for the team at about a five-year stretch. Once you've done that, because 5 years, you've gone through bad times too. You know what I mean? Like, if I jump onto a championship year, like, and during the playoffs or something, I somehow decide, you know what? I'm a Golden State Warrior fan. And I start dropping wees, F you. No. That's not cool. 5 years, you've seen them lose. You've gone through some things. At that point, you've been through crap together, man. I feel like then it's a little bit more justified.
I mean, but what are you going to do? Start like fact-checking
every
fan that you have?
I want them to come through me. That's exactly. In fact, from here on out, I will be the certification process. Send me an email. I will let you know whether or not you can use the phrase we. Okay, we finally get to return to one of my favorite segments on this podcast, our very own game show, Are You Smarter Than a Bandwagon Fan? And I am happy to report that we do, in fact, have our reigning champion already on the line, Mr. Jericho Faustino. Jericho, you out there?
Yes, sir. How's it going?
It's going well, man. I mean, I'll tell you what, your performance, however damn long ago that was, has kind of left some ripples in the Warriors community. I've had like more than a few people reach out and say that they were pretty impressed at how far you went. Have you let the success go to your head or were you not that surprised?
Not that surprised. Sorry.
Did you want to drop a freestyle now, or is that? I mean, it could become your gimmick. You might be able to do it every single time, or do you want to save that?
No, I'll do one, but Scott has to make a beatbox for me.
Scott,
all right, ready? Boom, boom.
No.
Well, that was terrible. And I am also happy to report that we have what I feel is going to be a really strong competitor, and in fact, just may be knocking Jericho off his current throne, Mr. World B. Sprewell. World B., we got you out there?
I'm right here, ready to go.
Glad yeah.
To thanks for having me.
Of course, man. We appreciate you coming on. Are you a little intimidated by the freestyle combination of Scott and Jericho at all? Did that blow your socks off or what?
All two beats. It got me, I'm intrigued to hear more, to tell you the truth.
Well, there's the first place where you and I differ, because I want to hear no more of that at all. We already know Jericho's, stated talent, man. He played pretty well last week, or whenever the hell it was that we did that. Are you intimidated at all, World B, or are you feeling good about this?
You know, I feel like I'm feeling pretty good about it. I'm not intimidated, and I'm feeling good. I'm ready to go.
That's what I like to hear. Well, before we jump in, real quick predictions. Scotty, you already know where the hell I lean, man. My boy World B is going to win this. You should know that now. If you want to just give up and agree with me, you can.
Well, despite the fact that Jericho left me hanging on that freestyle there, I'm definitely going with the people's champ.
There you go. Well, you know how this works, Jericho. You get to decide who goes first. So would you like to, do you want to set the tone and be the first person, or do you want to let World B go and pick up the slack after?
He can go first.
All right. For those at home who don't know the game, or even as our competitors may have forgotten it, it is this. You have a chance to answer as many Warriors questions consecutively in a row as you possibly can. The only twist is that every question you answer right will then go back a year. So we're going to start with a question about this year. If you get that right, we'll go back to last year. You get that right, we go back 2 years ago, and so on and so on. And the only other thing you should keep in mind is that you have 30 seconds to answer each and every question. Any concerns from you guys? Or are you ready to jump in?
Let's go. Let's do this.
World B, you ready?
My only question is, will there be a review of shot clock at if it's a discrepancy in... No, I'm just kidding. I'm ready. I'm feeling good.
We do, in fact. We have Sakakis waiting by, man. They'll go through each one of these in painstaking detail. All right, World B, first question is to you, or at least all the questions until you get one wrong are going to be to you. We will start off with this year. Today is what? Tuesday the 10th. So we start here. World B, who do the Warriors play tonight?
Miami Heat.
Final answer?
Yeah, final answer. Yeah.
Boom, Miami lock him in. Factually correct. We go back a year to the championship loss. True or false, Kent Bazemore was on the 2015-2016 team.
False.
Absolutely right. We go back to the 2014-2015 year. True or false, Steph was the unanimous MVP.
14-15. False.
You sure? You locking yourself in?
MVP, but not unanimous.
No question in your mind? You locked in?
No question in my mind.
Done. Right. We go back another year, 2013-2014. What player led the team in rebounds and blocks?
Rebound and blocks. 2014-15. Oh, boy.
13-14.
Okay, got it. Man, that's a good... That's I'm finding myself pondering that one pretty...
10 seconds.
Rebounds and blocks. I'm going to go with Andrew Bogut.
With literally 1 second to spare, and I'm happy to say you are right. We move on to another one. 2012-2013, what three players did the Warriors draft this year?
In order, Harrison Barnes, Festus Ezeli, and Draymond Green.
Oh, he's just showing off now, ladies and gentlemen. I feel, Scott, he's starting to get worried?
No, he's got some good knowledge on these early seasons, but we saw how deep Jericho goes. He goes deep.
No, I'm just asking. All right.
Go deep, bro.
World B, we turn back to you. We are now talking about the 2011-2012 season. Which Warriors rookie made the all-rookie first team?
Wait, give me the year again, 2011-2012?
Exactly right. We can hear him Googling it as we speak.
Right. No, I don't have my computer in front of me. I should have done. I don't know if that's cheating or not. Boy, 11-12, that's definitely post-Monte, I think, right? It's got to be post-Monte. 2011-2012 rookie.
5 seconds.
Clay Thompson.
Clay Thompson, you sure? You locking yourself in? You lock yourself in?
Last second guess. I don't know. Am I right or am I wrong?
You are right. And we move on to the 2010-2011 season. Who did the Warriors take with the sixth pick in the draft?
In what year?
2010-2011. World B, you know that this goes back 1 year every time, right?
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Just reset.
Okay, so who did we... Okay. Sixth overall pick? Oh, boy.
Feel free to think out loud. We got...
I'm struggling.
5 seconds.
Get a guess, Real B, you're my guy.
I'll say Monte, but I'm wrong. He was a second round pick. I'm bricking it. I'm down. I lost.
I will give you. I will break rank and ask. Is that your final answer? Is it your final answer?
I suck. Monte Ellis. I can't remember who it was.
You are wrong, and I'm gonna. So yes, you are wrong. I'm not gonna let you to redo it.
Steph Curry.
No. I'll help you. No, that's wrong as well.
Epke Udo, though, bro.
Exactly right. Epke Udo.
Epke Udo, bro.
Yeah.
I'm a little upset because we had Larry Riley on the show talking about it. All right, so that doesn't mean you've lost, though. That means that Jericho now has to get past the 2010-2011 season. Jericho, you ready to go?
Yes.
All right. A little bit of pressure, more pressure than Josh put on you, certainly. We're going to start with a question about this year, see where you go. What team has beat the Warriors twice this year?
Bumble. You know, that is a very good question.
Thanks, man.
What team beat the Warriors? Two times? Twice, you said?
Twice.
In a row?
No, not in a row.
Twice this season.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Oh, wow. Oh, 10 seconds. Oh, who saw this coming? Drama right in the first question.
Memphis Grizzlies.
Boom. He built up the drama, but still hit it out of the park. We go back a year to the championship loss in 2015-2016. Jericho, named two of the three teams the Warriors beat in the playoffs.
Houston. Portland. And... What year again?
You're just showing off now. You've gotten two of the three, but I will ask you. Are you sure? I'll focus on Portland specifically. Final answer?
What year again?
The year they lost in the championship, 2015-2016.
Portland, Houston, and OKC.
That's exactly right. I will take you as saying yes. Final answer, you are right. We go back a year, 2014-2015. Who was the head assistant coach?
Alvin Gentry.
Exactly right. What you don't know is that Scott just looked at me and whispered, these are harder. So he's clearly rooting for you, man. You're exactly right. We go back a year, 2013-2014. Which Warriors starter did not play in the playoff series against the Clippers due to injury?
Andrew Bogut.
Oh, man, hella confident, too. I won't even ask the final answer. You are right. We go to 2012-2013. How far did the Warriors make it in the playoffs that year, and who did they lose to?
They made it to the second round, and they lost to the Spurs.
Oh, Jericho, still on fire. We go to 2011-2012. For point of reference, Jericho, you are two questions away from being back-to-back defending champion. In 2011-2012, the Warriors waived this fan favorite, who later signed with the Knicks and now plays in Brooklyn.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Would this guy be Asian? Is that fair to ask? Do you know if he's Asian or not?
You can ask, but I can't answer it. Yeah, I do know, but I can't provide you with that answer.
He's from the Bay Area, I'm assuming, right? If this is the same guy I'm thinking about.
Questions I can't answer.
And
you got 5 seconds, I can tell you that.
I think his name was Jeremy Lin, right?
Oh, literally with 0.2 seconds to spare. I will count it, but I'll ask you, final answer. You sure?
Yes, sir.
And you are right, which takes us to 2010-2011. This is the one. Jericho, you get this one right, you unfortunately end World Beast Sprewell's short tenure on the show and prove me wrong for a second time in a row. The Warriors had 5 guards on their roster. Name 2 of them.
What was the year again? My bad.
2010-2011.
Steph Curry and Monte.
Factually correct, Jericho. My God, man.
Yeah.
This guy is murdering it. Well, I tell you what, in the interest of saving questions, we're going to keep this one open-ended. But for now, you have beaten World Beast Sprewell and move on to the next round. Anything you want to say to your fans out there, man?
Hi, Mom.
I like the idea that your lone fan is your mom. World B, you broke my heart, man. I mean, real deal, you broke my heart. How you feeling?
I'm feeling like I've been tormented and tortured by Epe Udo on 2 different occasions now. on one hand, how can you blame me for trying to wipe that from my memory? Epe Udo from Baylor University, undersized, so-called rebounding power forward. Anyway.
I respect that you're overcompensating at this stage. That's nicely played. Last question for both of you, because Scott and I just talked about it actually on the podcast. The Warriors this week supposedly had a chance to bring back Mike Dunleavy. Would either of you have wanted to see Mike D back on this team?
Oh, man. Hell no. Nah.
Yeah, that's – he's
– How about you?
He's sadly is a ghost from that same – Epe Udo, putrid past, Raul and, Larry Riley, et cetera, et cetera. So, no, definitely not Dunleavy. But they do need a little help. I think they need, possibly they need some help. I don't know.
They need to get Tyson Chandler, but that's just me, though. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's just you and Jalen Rose, if memory serves. You and I may be listening to the same podcast. And if you didn't, that's a great take. All right, gentlemen. Well, we really appreciate it. Jericho, congratulations. World B, I'd love to put you back into the contestant pool so we can see you sometime in the future. Would you like to come back on?
I'd be happy to. I enjoy the podcast, and I feel like I've wasted a lot of time and a lot of money following this Warriors team, and this might be a nice way to put some of the brain cells to use. I also just to me, I'm a basketball fan first and foremost. I happen to be a Warriors fan because I'm born and raised here. But I'm not a fanboy. I love the game of basketball, and it's kind of a dream come true that the team that we get to root for has become so awesome. So it's a great time, and I really appreciate what you guys are doing. And thanks everybody for letting me give it a shot here.
It's all good. We'll get you back on. In fact, we may put you into the secondary bracket. I'll have you beat Josh sometime in the future. Gentlemen, we've taken up enough of your time. Jericho, we will see you in the very near future. You've now got 2 wins under your belt. You are 3 wins away from the ultimate prize, man. Congratulations.
For sure.
Any final words before we get out of here?
Hey, I appreciate it. You guys keep up the great work, and go Dubs.
All right, gentlemen. Have a great night.
Peace out.
Another huge, fun segment with Are You Smarter? Jericho continues to establish his dominance. We got to find somebody to come in and beat this guy.
No, we don't, man. That Jericho's the man. He's going to keep holding it down.
Well, continue to listen out there. We will be announcing our next contestant remarkably soon. Until then, please remember you want to reach out to us. We can be hit up at warriorshuddle@gmail.com. Our Twitter account is @WarriorsHuddle. We've already given you resties. I won't do that again. Remember that our website is warriorsworld.net. We're also on vSporto. And as we mentioned last week, we are part of a brand new podcasting network, the Almighty Baller Podcasting Network. In fact, that's why you will hear ads at the front end. And we apologize for subjecting you guys to them, but we can't tell you how much we appreciate you listening through them. It means the world to us. Also, we can be found on iTunes and a bunch of other podcasting services. Go Warriors, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Good, good.
Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of three Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.